This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, we'll hear from Republican congressional candidate Brian Ellis, who is challenging incumbent Justin Amash in this summer's GOP primary. But first, there will be a new representative in Michigan's 63rd State House District next year. The current representative, State House Speaker Jace Bolger, cannot run again because of term limits. One Democrat and two Republicans are running to represent the district that includes part of Kalamazoo and also part of Calhoun County. Kalamazoo County Commissioner Dave Maturin is seeking the Republican nomination for the State House seat in the 63rd District. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you and the folks that listen to WMUK.
We also are joined today by Battle Creek Inquirer reporter Jennifer Bowman.
Thanks for having me.
And Kalamazoo Gazette reporter Alex Mitchell.
Thanks for having me, Gordon.
Dave Maturin, please begin by telling us a little bit more about yourself and briefly why you're running for State House.
Well, essentially, I'm running for State House. I'd like to take the record that I've developed at Kalamazoo County Government to Lansing. We've done a really good job of containing costs and bringing efficiencies to county government, reining in legacy costs. And I'd like to take that experience to Lansing to take a look at what I can do for the citizens of the state of Michigan in the 63rd District.
Jennifer Bowman, first question for Dave Maturin.
Well, I guess we'll start with roads. It's everyone's not-so-favorite topic, but seems to be the one everyone talks about. Can't get a deal passed by state lawmakers right now, but roads are still crumbling. Calhoun County Township roads, which includes some of the 63rd District, they've estimated $284 million in cost to get it to good condition. If you're in Lansing, what do you think needs to be done?
Well, I think we need to obviously take a look at what we can do for roads within the existing budget. Roads are funded through Act 51 money. People are driving more fuel-efficient cars, fewer miles. Therefore, there's less money coming into the road system. I know they've been struggling. It seems like every day you see something in one of the two reporting services from Lansing. They got a deal. They don't have a deal. They included this. They didn't include that. I guess my approach, and that's basically what I heard from just about everybody I've talked to and the thousands of doors I've knocked on last couple months, is what are you going to do about the roads? But a lot of people still don't want to have any increased fees for it. I think what I would like to do is take a look at the budget, state budget, see what money is available there, see if we can prioritize things. We've done that on the county level, and find money to use for roads in addition to the Act 51 money. But it's got to be a permanent solution. It just can't be a one-time, gee, we found some money this year because the economy was good or whatever. So we've got to find a way of doing it. If it takes some sort of an increase, you have to take a look at what we're doing, how we're doing roads. I wouldn't be adverse to an increase if, in fact, that was the only option. That, of course, would come with some reforms, such as guarantees for roads, other type of issues, how we build roads and how we go about it. So I wouldn't be in favor of anything unless we got some reforms in how we deal with our road system.
But if something's going to be increased, should it be gas tax, vehicle registration fees? Where would you want to go?
You know, I think you could probably take a look at all of the vehicle registration fees, gas tax. You have cars that don't burn fuel, that burn electricity, so to speak. They also use the road, so there's got to be some method of, I guess, distributing the burden. I would also like to see as much money as possible go into the roads and not into other issues that are tied with the roads. I think right now it's critical to get the roads fixed first things first, potholes first. Worry about other side issues such as pedestrian walkways and things like that are really nice for society. But I think right now the people want to see those chuck holes, potholes fixed in front of their house.
Alex Mitchell.
Dave, a package of bills passed the House and Senate last week that would exempt gun ownership forms, permits, or licenses from Freedom of Information Act requests. Would this have been a measure that you supported?
I would have supported that. I haven't followed it completely and wasn't aware of all of the dialogue that went on. But to me, I think there's been some abuses of it where people have filed FOIAs and harassed legitimate gun owners. And I think they've got a right to not have that information public. I think the police have access to it, if I'm not mistaken. And I think there are some prohibitions against the police not using it for appropriate police purposes. I guess my gut reaction, without having seen all the legislation and dealing with the dialogue, would be I would have supported that.
Jennifer,
how would you have voted on the minimum wage hike?
I would have voted for the bill that finally passed. I'm not really wild about government telling employers what they should pay their employees and what kind of compensation package they should offer to them, but I think the bill that did pass was probably the I don't want to call it evil, lesser of two evils, for lack of a better word. I think that the fact that the virtually every restaurateur I talked to really thought that was going to be a very, very difficult situation for them to deal with. And so that exempted them from the whatever the typical rate would have been and put it on a percentage. And at least they were happy with that. So I think it was something that was likely to pass in one format or another, and I would have voted for it.
Are you saying that you would prefer the state not have a minimum wage at all?
I guess they do, and it's not something you're going to get around. And I think there's going to be some minimum wage at some point in time, either imposed by the state or the federal government. I'm just saying that I'm a little hesitant to have government telling the private sector employers how to compensate their people.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with Kalamazoo County Commissioner Dave Maturin. He is a candidate for State House in the 63rd District, which includes parts of both Kalamazoo and Calhoun counties. We're also joined by Alex Mitchell of the Kalamazoo Gazette and Battle Creek Inquirer reporter Jennifer Bowman. Jennifer.
Townships are considering possible millages for improving the roads. Do you think that's the way for them to go?
I certainly think that's if the citizens in that township want to levy a millage for it, I think that's fine. I don't see any problem with people voluntarily wanting to pay a millage. I believe it's Climax Township has had two mills for roads for an awful long time. They got some pretty nice secondary roads in Climax Township. I'm not sure if that necessarily is the way to go. I'd really like to tie it more to a user fee. But you can say that the properties out there benefit by having a better road in front of them. So I think there's some nexus between the tax and the benefit. And I think Texas Township levies a per parcel, $60 per parcel for that. So it's not necessarily tied to a millage. You get the same benefit whether you got a $60,000 house or a $600,000 house. So perhaps the way Texas went on a per parcel basis may be more equitable. But I think anytime people want to do things to improve their infrastructure and do it with their own taxes, I think that's fine.
The concern I hear from township supervisors, they say, I don't get any direct funding from the state. I don't have enough authority when it comes to improving my roads. Do you have any suggestions, or do you think there needs to be this direct flow of money to the townships from the state?
Well, right now the Act 51 funding is split up between the state and the county road commissions and cities and villages. And townships, for whatever reason, way back when Act 51 was put in place, essentially get money through the road commissions. And here in Kalamazoo, they have what they call PAR funds, participating funds, where the county or non-county primary roads will come up with a match money. And if the township matches that, then they'll take that money and use that for roads. We did that for years in Brady Township, where we'd allocate general fund money to the match with the county road commission and pave some of our roads. The problem is that there's never enough money to go around, and we were even turning paved roads back to gravel back then simply because they're cheaper to maintain and probably in some instances better than the paved roads we have now with the potholes in them.
Alex?
Dave, last year on this program when we spoke with Michigan House Speaker Jace Bolger, the man you're looking to replace, he said he would be open to exploring the possible decriminalization of marijuana so that possession of small amounts could result in a civil infraction and just a fine. Would that be something that you would be open to exploring?
I think I would be open to exploring it. I think our prisons and jails are filled with a lot of low-level minor drug user criminals, and I don't think that's a very good use of the county's taxpayers to put somebody away for $30,000, $40,000 a year. I think it's something to take a look at. You've got some experiments out west, Colorado and maybe Washington State, that have legalized marijuana or decriminalized it to some extent. I mean, I haven't followed it completely. But, you know, let's take a look at those experiments and see where we're at from that. And we also have things in Kalamazoo County, like our drug courts, which I think, you know, try to deal with people that are first-time low-level drug users, put them in a drug court, give them some support. That's certainly far better spending the $2,000, $3,000 it costs us to do a drug court intervention, and we were one of the first in the country to do it, rather than spending $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year putting somebody in jail or in prison. So I'd like to see something along that line. But obviously I don't know everything all about the issue, but it's certainly something worth exploring.
Do you think that the state should be putting any more limitations on the use of medical marijuana, which the voters have approved in this state? There's been some regulations put in place. Do you think the state needs to do more there, or should they leave things where they're at for now?
That's another issue I haven't heard about when I've been knocking on doors. You know, the voters voted for it. I mean, obviously it was a popular thing for folks to want to have in the state. And I think we're probably at a point right now where there are probably appropriate, if you need safeguards, there are probably appropriate safeguards for the community and what they've enacted.
Jennifer?
Something that the state Supreme Court has prohibited is storefront dispensaries. And from medical marijuana users, they say that that limits my safe access. Now I have to go to a caregiver's home. Who knows how safe that is? Do you think there should be a change in that?
So you say they've eliminated storefront dispensaries, and then you got to go to someone's home?
You have to get it directly from your caregiver.
Directly from your caregiver. You know, I guess I don't know enough about that topic and whether it endangers the health, safety, and welfare of the general public having it that way. But obviously, if it's something that's legal, there should be a method by which a person can obtain that.
Safely.
Safely, yeah.
Alex.
Governor Snyder's mentioned the possibility of examining the Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act to include protections for LGBT citizens. Would that be something that you'd support?
You know, I think I need to know a little bit more about the ramifications of that. I know the Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act has been around for a long time, and there are several protected classes already in that. I've heard Speaker Bolger talk about some of the issues, pro and con. I think it's certainly something we should take a look at. I know the business community I think business leaders from Michigan have come out and said this is something we need to do. We need to attract talented people to come here, and if this is an impediment to that, then perhaps we should take a look at it. I'm not really sure which way I'd go on that at this point in time, but I think we need to do what we can to make this a place for folks that can contribute to our society and are creative and want to be employed in the jobs that we're creating to come to Michigan.
When you say look at the ramifications, what would be your concerns on the other side?
You know, I don't know all the details about all of it, whether it's renters, whether it's a housing issue or things like that, whether it's just individuals in their context with somebody else's lifestyle that they're not comfortable with, and it could be in a small rental situation. I'm not sure if those people are already exempt from Elliot Larson or whether it applies to everybody. I just need to do some more research into that, like a lot of issues that I'm not completely familiar with.
Let me end with an issue of education, because Calhoun County is the site of an interesting experiment going on with the merger of the high schools of Marshall and Albion. Do you think that the state should be trying to encourage more of those efforts for schools to consolidate, perhaps save some costs, but also perhaps run the risk of some culture clashes and people perhaps feeling like they've lost the identity of their town if their high school is no longer open?
Well, it's certainly nothing that the state mandated. It was something that community, the communities of Marshall and Albion, decided to do on their own volition.
But Governor Snyder has said he would like schools to look for more consolidation.
I think consolidation is certainly, you know, something. I don't know how many school districts got in the state. I'm sure there are several hundred. Many of them are quite small. To me, that makes all the sense in the world. If you get any unit of government together, whether it's a school district or townships or cities or whatever, I mean, we look at the police force sharing between K Township and Parchment. I mean, you look at those things. Those are the things that we need to do to focus on, to concentrate on, to keep costs down in an environment where our tax revenue is not going to grow much. So I think it's a great idea. I mean, they do that, and they share a superintendent in Centerville and Mendon. I mean, there are lots of sharing things you can do without necessarily losing your identity. Now, you would if you combined a school district, but you look at all the school districts around that have combined over the years, you know, I mean, you've got a lot of districts that used to be in existence, and now they're not. They're consolidated districts, and that makes sense. So, you know, the taxpayer is not going to want to fork over much more money if we can give the kids the same sort of educational opportunities and save some money doing it. I'd be all in favor of that, but it should be locally driven, but maybe with some incentives and some carrots offered by the state.
Dave Maturin, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. It's been enjoyable.
Dave Maturin is a member of the Kalamazoo County Commission. He is running for State House in the 63rd District, which includes parts of both Kalamazoo and Calhoun counties. And thanks again to Jennifer Bowman of the Battle Creek Inquirer.
Thank you.
And Kalamazoo Gazette reporter Alex Mitchell.
Thanks, Gordon.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Businessman Brian Ellis is mounting a primary challenge in Michigan's 3rd Congressional District, which includes both Battle Creek and Grand Rapids. He is challenging incumbent Congressman Justin Amash in the Republican primary. Ellis is also a former member of the East Grand Rapids School Board. Brian Ellis, thank you for being here.
Glad to be here. Good morning.
And we're also joined by Battle Creek Inquirer reporter Jennifer Bowman.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Ellis, why don't you begin by briefly telling us a little bit more about yourself and why you're running for the U.S. House?
Sure. Well, I think the main thing that seems to resonate as I go around, and one of the reasons why I got into the race, is I'm not a career politician. I'm a businessman by background. I've kind of owned two businesses in my career. One was a food manufacturing business. I made French fries and sold those to restaurants. And then sold that business, and I started a investment management firm. And so I approached this job with a business orientation, with a strong financial background. And to me, these are the biggest challenges facing our country. We have budget deficits as far as the eye can see. We have our national debt is at $17 trillion and climbing, going to 18 to 19, which I find to be completely unacceptable. And we have the whole debacle of the Obamacare rollout, and that needs to be repealed. So as I assessed the situation, I felt that the skills that I can bring to the table really line up with the challenges the country faces. And then when I bring in the present representative and how he's voted on numerous issues, when he doesn't support a balanced budget amendment, when he didn't support small business tax cuts, when he didn't support the Keystone Pipeline, when he didn't support the life issue, as I'm a pro-life candidate, this got me highly motivated to get in the race, and here I am.
Jennifer Bowman, first question for Brian Ellis.
Yesterday, the Detroit Free Press came out with the latest poll numbers. It shows your opponent, Congressman Amash, has a 20-point lead. He's continuously said, you're not a credible candidate. The Detroit Free Press said maybe with these recent poll numbers, he might be right. Is it too early to dismiss you as a primary challenger?
Oh, totally. I mean, you know, what's he going to say, that I've got him on the run like I do? You know, I've had a lot of people contribute to my campaign. I've had now some key endorsements come through that's validation of the path that I'm on. Right to Life has endorsed me. The Michigan Farm Bureau has endorsed me. The Grand Rapids Chamber of Commerce has endorsed me. The State Chamber of Commerce has endorsed me. So, you know, I'm not worried that I'm down. I mean, I'm just worried about where I'm at on Election Day. And, you know, I cite this, you know, John Engler was down 13 with 2 weeks to go. And other people that I know, like Ken Sikkema, he was down 20 with 3 weeks to go. And here I am, 7 weeks to go and down roughly 20. Okay.
But how do you go from you're down 20 points? And admittedly, yes, there is time to saying that he's on the run. I mean, he is ahead and the Free Press poll actually shows he's over 50%, which is a big mark for an incumbent.
Yeah, well, these key groups are coming my way. Each day, the momentum is building greater and greater. And people, these are organizations and individuals that previously supported Justin Amash. And now they're running from him because of his voting record. He's got a horrendous voting record on just about any issue you want to talk about. And that's the premise of my campaign, is I don't feel like he is voting in a manner that reflects the values of our district. He's voting his own personal libertarian agenda, and I don't think that's what the voters want. And we're going to find out.
You say that you want to repeal Obamacare. There's a story in the Washington Post which just came out saying that there's a lot of Republican candidates who are now backing away from the word repeal and talking about fixing, tweaking, all sorts of other things. Are there parts of the Affordable Care Act which you do want to keep in place if there is some sort of replacement down the line?
Yeah, if you're talking about a replacement, I think what the article might have been referring to, I didn't see it, was you know, the practicality until the Republicans gain the Senate and gain the presidency, it is more difficult to repeal. But I still think that we need to repeal this horrendous law. I mean, it's just there's no free market principles embedded in it. It's a government control and takeover of the healthcare system. you know, certain things if we could adjust right now, if that's your question, the 30-hour work week, you know, I think we should restore the 40-hour work week. And that 30-hour provision of Obamacare is starting to have implications where people's hours are being cut, putting the pressure on people even more. So that's just one example of something that could be fixed right now, but I don't see any effort to do that.
Should a replacement include a provision that you cannot be denied coverage for a pre-existing condition?
Yes, I do think that is a good concept to have in any sort of replacement, yes.
So I assume you don't like the mandate that people have to have health insurance.
Correct.
Okay. How do you allow then for a provision that says you can't deny coverage for pre-existing conditions if you don't have a mandate? Because if we all can wait and get health insurance when we're sick, the system's not going to sustain itself. So how do you address that?
Again, I think when you have the government interfering in the system and doing it in what I would call a heavy-handed manner, I think if we had a free market system where people could pick the plan of their choice based on their circumstances and their needs and their individual situation, and then be allowed to have the pooling in a greater quantity, you know, across state lines, then I think we would be able to have cost-effective plans that would work for the insured that are buying it.
Okay, but my question is, if people cannot be denied coverage for pre-existing conditions and they don't have to have health insurance, can't they wait until they're sick to buy health insurance?
I get where you're coming from. I don't know the exact answer to that, but there's a workaround where you can not be denied for your pre-existing condition, and we can't allow people to kind of game the system, so to speak. And so you'd have to cover that in whatever you implement.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with Brian Ellis. He is a Republican candidate for Congress challenging incumbent Representative Justin Amash in the district that includes Battle Creek and Grand Rapids. And also here is Battle Creek Inquirer reporter Jennifer Bowman. Jennifer.
A lot of the criticism that your campaign has raised concerns about is your opponent's voting record. He is one known to explain every vote on Facebook, as he has reminded folks in response to your criticisms. But a lot of his explanations for why he votes no on things, for example, the balanced budget amendment, is that it doesn't go far enough. And not that he's not in support of a balanced budget amendment, but that what was presented to him was not enough. What's your response to that?
The vote is the bottom line. And so your explanation is not more important than your vote. The vote is how all the citizens of the 3rd District are being represented, and that's your constitutional obligation. Now, I think it's good that he explains his votes. I would do the same, not necessarily all on Facebook, but I think you need to be held accountable in that way. But it's not, he talks or acts like it's the reverse, that his explanation is the most important thing and not the vote. The vote is the most important thing. And just because you explain it doesn't mean you're right. So there's a little bit of a disconnect here. So balanced budget amendment, we talked about that. He's the only Republican in Michigan not to support the balanced budget amendment. Now, he didn't say it didn't go far enough. He said he had a better one that never saw the light of day and never came to a vote. I mean, I would have voted for the balanced budget amendment. We clearly have a spending problem in this country, and we need that discipline because the politicians in Washington have proven that they don't have the discipline to balance the budget. It's that simple. And so when it came down to crunch time on this vote, how were we represented? We were represented with a no vote, which means continue the status quo of out-of-control spending. It was a great opportunity for our congressman to say, I stand behind balancing the budget, and so I'm going to vote for it. But hey, I also have an alternative that's maybe, I think, better. But instead, he voted no. So I'm sitting there going, this is how we're represented. Our representative is saying, the 3rd District of Michigan doesn't stand for a balanced budget amendment. You can't have it both ways. You can't say you support it and then vote against it. And that goes on a lot of votes.
One of the criticisms of Justin Amash from fellow Republicans are his efforts when it comes to national security and privacy. What limits do you believe there should be on the government's efforts to collect data and on surveillance efforts?
Sure. Well, there's a clear distinction. In fact, I feel like his campaign is spreading lies. I do not believe in spying on American citizens whatsoever. We have the Fourth Amendment that protects us from that. However, there was a provision that came up for a vote that dealt with our ability to monitor foreign terrorists like Al-Qaeda. And Justin Amash voted against monitoring foreign terrorists like Al-Qaeda. I think that's totally wrong. If we have the capability to monitor foreigners, he's trying to confuse it and say, I want to spy on all U.S. citizens. I want to be really clear. I do not agree with that. I'm against spying on U.S. citizens. But if we have the capability to monitor foreign terrorists that are clearly trying to do us harm, like Al-Qaeda, I think we should do that to keep our country safe. We obviously see some horrific things going on in the Middle East right now, and we need to stay on top of the situation and keep this country safe. And I think taking a vote like that is not responsible.
Would you vote for the reauthorization of the Patriot Act?
I'd have to see what's in it. I mean, the Patriot Act, think about this. It was a reaction and maybe an overreaction to what happened on 9/11. Clearly, nobody in this country wants to see another 9/11 happen. And so then that's basically how the Patriot Act came to be. Now, clearly, they've stepped over the line and they've gone too far with it. And they're monitoring from what you read. I don't have all the facts because I don't get the classified data. They're monitoring U.S. citizens. And if that's going on, that is wrong. And that needs to stop. But if we can monitor foreign terrorists, then I think we should be doing that in an attempt to keep our country safe.
Jennifer?
Would you support Amash should you lose the primary?
I would support the Republican nominee as I've done in the past. You know, I would point out Justin Amash, when Mitt Romney ultimately became the nominee for president, he was one of three Republicans that didn't support Mitt Romney, didn't endorse him, and now we've got Barack Obama. So Justin Amash and the people that think he's doing a good job are in large part responsible for why we don't have Mitt Romney as our president and we have Barack Obama. Justin supported somebody else, Ron Paul, in the primary. That's his right. But then when it coalesced around Mitt Romney as our nominee, if you're truly a Republican, you would have stood forward and supported Mitt to go forward and take on Barack Obama. And Justin Amash didn't do that, and I think he was really wrong in that, and we're paying a big price for that right now.
Do you think this race is giving us a couple of different factions of the Republican Party? Are you and Justin Amash part of different Republican groups within the same party?
Well, people are trying to portray it that way, but I don't think that way. You know, people have said to me, well, you're taking on the Tea Party. And I say, well, absolutely I'm not, because look at some of the things the Tea Party stands for. Limited government, lower taxes, civic responsibility. Those things all resonate with me as a conservative Republican. But what I am taking on is a congressman that says one thing and votes another. Don't listen to his rhetoric. Look at his voting record. That's why we're putting out the bizarre vote of the week. Don't listen to his explanation. Go to the bottom line, the vote, how you and I were represented. So when it came for a balanced budget, 3rd District said no on behalf of Justin. When it came to small business tax cut, 3rd District said no on behalf of Justin. When it came to upholding life, he said no on behalf of the residents of the 3rd District. I think he's on the wrong side. All these votes I'm bringing out, he's on the wrong side of the vote in my book.
Brian Ellis, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Brian Ellis is a candidate for Congress in Michigan's 3rd Congressional District. He's challenging the incumbent, Justin Amash, in this summer's Republican primary. The district includes both Battle Creek and Grand Rapids. And thanks again to Battle Creek Inquirer reporter Jennifer Bowman.
Thank you, Gordon.
Longer versions of the interviews on West Southwest can be found at wmuk.org. This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.